Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Red Men Originals podcast. I'm Steve Hall, joined by Steve Plunkett, Chloe Bloxham, and Dan Club. Yes, we are the originals, although literally the two originals aren't here today for differing reasons. Paul's on holiday, and Chris was watching the Super Bowl and booked a day off, which was very clever, because me and Chloe watched the Super Bowl, and we're very tired because we watched the Super Bowl. So that's why Chris is the boss, because he decides to be clever and plan in advance. We're not so clever, I think, Chloe.
No, I haven't slept yet.
But, hence the Red Bull.
Yeah, that is exactly right.
That's a big kind of Red Bull as well. You've got there as
very
well.
Much needed.
We're going to work through it. We've got a Lucozade for Steve as well. We're all
on coconut water.
All well hydrated.
Absolutely. Yeah,
nobody as well hydrated as me, though, because this shit is the shit.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, if they want to sponsor us, they can, but I'm on the Pepsi Max, I'll be honest. Yeah. So that's what we've been up to, but it's absolutely fine. We're going to be speaking, of course, about Liverpool versus Burnley, Liverpool 3, Burnley 1. We're going to have a little look at the squad as well, because yes, Liverpool's squad is a little bit like a revolving door at the moment. Some come back, some go out injured and all kinds. So we're going to have a chat about that in part two. Before we get cracking on Liverpool 3, Burnley 1, just want to give you guys a heads up, as we always do at the start of these shows. Our tour tickets are still on sale. Yes, our end of season party at Hotel Anfield has sold out, but our tour tickets, the Jürgen Klopp celebration tour, yes, we're going live in Belfast on March 24th, Dublin on March 25th, and London on April 24th. If you want to come to one of the Belfast or Dublin gigs, ticketmaster.ie, just search Redmen TV. You'll see all of our beautiful faces on the picture there. And if you want to come to the London show, it's axs.com. Search there as well, Redmen TV, and get your tickets. Come and have a big old celebration. It's us and Keo. Keo will be singing lots of Jürgen Klopp songs, I'm sure, because yeah, Jürgen can't shout at us when he's not there, because he doesn't seem to like people singing his song, but we're going to do it anyway. Right then, with all that being said, let's talk about the footy. Dan, I'll start with you first, mate. Injuries, illness, suspensions, there's a bereavement, unfortunately, in there as well. Liverpool are missing a lot of players. I think it's testament, actually, to the squad building that Liverpool have done, that they can put out such a strong team. And I think it was 10 absentees, and that's still a pretty strong team that Liverpool got out there, which, credit to them. Again, I know Jürgen did say, oh, you know, I'm going to punch someone in the face if they ask me what it's like to have everyone back, because he doesn't know. But yeah, that's a long list of absentees in Liverpool still. You know, we'll talk about the performance, but that's a good start in 11 on paper.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely it is. Yeah, and as you say, that is very much testament to what we've managed to build over the last sort of 18 months, with a few key players leaving in amongst that as well. So yeah, credit to Jürgen Klopp and indeed the staff around him for that. Obviously it's testament to the academy as well, which you've seen really come to the fore at times this season, because there's three or four lads there on the bench at Anfield on Saturday who then played under 21's footy yesterday, so that just shows you what we're dealing with. But yeah, the squad is being stretched thin, and it's a shame, because just when you start getting a couple of lads back, you see Salah obviously doing his rehab and stuff like that, and you think, okay, we're not too far away from him. You get Bataro Endo back as well, you see Tsimikas come back, Robertson, Trent, you start thinking, tell you what, the band's getting back together here. And you start dreaming of that situation whereby, what happens when we do everyone, who gets dropped from the bench? And you start thinking, god, we might not have room for a Conor Bradley, a Joel Quanta, as brilliant as they've been, they might not be able to fit in the squad. But unfortunately, that luxury never seems to fall upon us, because as you say, every time they're nearly back together, somebody else drops with illness or a suspension in Canate's case. So frustrating from that sense, but as you say, absolutely incredible that we are managing to put out those types of teams and even have a little bit left in reserve. If you look at what Harvey Elliott managed to do from the bench, the fact you've got him there waiting to come and impact the game, you've got Cody Gakpo likewise, you know, all season players who've had impacts on games in different ways, shapes and forms for Liverpool, it's incredible. Because you've a lot of other teams, whether you be fighting at the top of the Premier League, the middle or the bottom, if you took out 10 first teamers, you don't know what you'd be looking at. Even some of the people in and around us, it'd be an absolute shell, skeleton squad. But Liverpool, thankfully, have enough to get jobs done.
And I suppose, Chloe, that's where the fixedness does you a little bit of a favour. If you, because listen, no Alisson, no Gomez. Obviously, I can go through them all. Canate suspended. We know McConnor Bradley's away. Soboslai, Salah are both out. Pacetic, Thiago, we'll speak about a bit later on as well. There's eight straight away. There's others I'm missing. Ben Doak's out, for example. There's Graven Birch feels something in the warm-up. Although he's on the bench, as literally a non-playing option because they couldn't get him on. Like, if that is City away or Arsenal away or even United at home or something, you're like, oh. But that's where, it's, for once, the fixed list has done Liverpool a favour, that we're missing the loud lads and they've got this flu book, but it is Burnley. And although Burnley put a challenge up, Liverpool's team that they put out was good enough to beat Burnley. Whether that 11's good enough to play in other games, we hopefully won't need to find out because we're getting some players back. But that kind of did the Reds a little bit of a favour, I suppose.
Yeah, but also big players stepping up. I mean, I've criticised Callagher quite a little bit this season just because it feels like, you know, from the Carabao Cup winning goalkeeper to now, it does feel like he's fallen off a cliff a little bit. It feels like every shot seems to go past him, but he made three massive one-on-one saves that kept Liverpool in the game. You know, Wataru Endo coming back and going straight in from the AFCON. You've got big players stepping up. All of our front three scored, and sometimes it was scrappy, but we really battled through it. So yeah, and look, you've got Curtis Jones there who's being played at right back halfway through a game. You know, he was a left winger at one point at the start of his career, so it shows the variety that we have, and also, you know, the versatility of the players, but also the determination and desire to be put anywhere on the pitch and just give absolutely everything. It was Burnley, and Burnley could have scored against us and at times found it a little bit too easy, but big players stood up in big moments, and the other end we were quite deadly. So yeah, thankfully it was only Burnley, but we still had to put in a winning performance.
Absolutely, it's job done, you've got to win it. And it's the Chloe did mention Kelleher there, and I think it's fair to say, like, he's been up and down this season. We'd all agree this is the most games he's ever played, by the way, in a Liverpool season, so it isn't like he's undercooked in terms of performances. Yeah. In fact, some people were saying the other thing of maybe the more you see of him, actually the less that you like about it. But he did have a good game. You know, he makes a vital save one-on-one and does well not to get put in hospital by Virgil van Dijk. I felt when he saw that collision, I was like, oh my God, Adrian's coming on here. Kelleher's teeth are somewhere on row seven. Thankfully, he was okay. Mm. He makes a big one-on-one save at 2-1 as well. He's out quickly moments after to make sure the guy hits it round the post. So, yeah, a really impressive performance from Kelleher, one that, you know, we know he's capable of, but we probably haven't seen enough of this season.
Exactly right, and Chloe's right. You know, that goalkeeper that went in the cup finals for us and did so well. The problem with keepers is it's all about confidence and games under your belt, and being a backup goalkeeper to someone like Alisson's probably one of the hardest jobs in football. So when you get your opportunity, you've got to take it, and rightfully criticised for certainly letting in some goals which you wouldn't have expected him to be beaten by. But I think the point, moreover, in its entirety here is when you're top of the league, players will turn up because you're top of the league. If you're sitting in 10th place and you've got 10 players injured, the desire might not be the same. But when you've got a top of the league position to protect and you're playing for something at the end of the season and your boss has said he's leaving, there's lots of variables here. When you bring them all together, lads who, Curtis Jones at right back, for instance, is going to put a shift in there because of the bigger picture, because of what they're trying to achieve. So squad's in a good place psychologically at the moment. It's well motivated. We're doing well. And lads, when they're getting their opportunities, like you say, if we ever get everybody fit, they're giving Klopp a headache, aren't they?
Yeah, one day. We might get there one day. Stick a lot
of time.
Yeah, like, who knows? But this is what can happen when you're in every trophy, I suppose, yeah, as well. Yeah. Like, you are going to lose lads along the way. Yeah. Chloe, I'll come back to you on Kelleher because, you know, Liverpool do have a League Cup final, he's going to play in a couple of weeks' time. And again, he's been up and down. He's had some good games recently. He's had some good performances. But if he went into that League Cup final cold, you're like, oh, but now he's had this one. Obviously, you don't want Alisson out ever. But if he's going to get sick and your goalkeeper can still play well and you get 3 points, there's almost a little reverse benefit to Alisson getting the flu there, in that Kelleher should now go into Chelsea feeling a little bit better about himself, because two massive moments in the game. He's had a direct impact on Liverpool, winning 3 points to go back top of the league. It could do him a little bit of a favour in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, and hopefully it does. I mean, look, we were all sat here saying several years ago, he's the best number two that you can ask for. There's no one better as a number two in the league. He could go to the majority of Premier League sides and go straight into their squads. And you need that player to come back for the final. And he's been showing it. I think he played Sheffield United early on in December and he was crucial in that 2-0 win. You know, Fulham in the second leg of the Carabao Cup, he makes two unbelievable saves in the first half of that, which are one-on-ones. And you're starting to see the Callaghan we know of. We know he's unbelievable with the ball at his feet. We know he's so cool, calm and collected. It's when, you know, at times he's been put under pressure and he's let the ball go past him a little bit too easy this season. And you're seeing the improvements. You're seeing him make himself bigger. That was the big thing for me on the weekend, is a lot of the times this season when he's came out, he looked small in that goal. But when he rushed out against Burnley, he made himself big. He didn't go to the ground straight away. He didn't make it easy. And yeah, it's good that he's got that performance in, because he saved Liverpool against Burnley. That's, you know, yeah, we've scored three goals, but in massive games, he had to come up and prove that he was a boss keeper. And in those moments, he saved Liverpool. So he can take that confidence. He can take it hopefully into the Carabao Cup. And hopefully we will also have a much stronger team overall, a much stronger squad come the Carabao Cup. So it's not as easy. But yet, the first 2 minutes, there's a set piece and a lad volleys it, and thankfully it goes straight down. The keeper's throat, it goes straight down to Callaghan, and you just felt instantly, he needs that. That's exactly what he needs, and it set the tone for him. It made him comfortable, and he was a massive reason as to why we got over the line and we won.
I suppose, well, Dan, like, by all, obviously Nottingham Forest bid for him in January, and Liverpool rightly said no, and this is the reason why you say no to those things. I remember at the time hearing people say, like, you know, Pitaluga can come and be on the bench, just take the 15 mil. If anyone's seen highlights of Pitaluga at the weekend, he's still got a long way to go over in Ireland. He has a bit of a bad game, so this is the reason we kept him. But the likelihood is, and we've been saying this for a few years now, in the summer there's a very good chance he leaves. If he's played 13 games so far, we know he's going to get a 14th. We'll see how things go. He might get to 15. You know, the most he's played before this season was 8, and that was in the 2022 season when Liverpool went all the way to the League Cup final. Yeah. He's almost half playing for a move as well, because if you'd have asked 6 months ago who's going to sign Callaghan, I don't know. Like, is he high end Championship, low end Premier League? Like, Nottingham Forest coming in for him. It's crazy to say, but a couple of good games on the run, and that move you get is worth more to you. You go to a bigger team, you might get Liverpool might get a bit more money for him as well. So obviously, he wants to win trophies, he wants to do all that, but he does want the move. He wants to play for Ireland, and this little period that he's in now could help him determine what type of club he goes to.
100% it could. Yeah, there's loads of factors at play here, and obviously, you know, potentially playing a hand in another trophy success for Liverpool will sort of bolster what Liverpool might get in their coffers for him and his reputation along the way as well. And you mentioned Ireland there, he's not actually number one for Ireland. I think it's Gavin Bazunu, isn't it, because he plays regular football. So Callaghan is going to want that at some point, not only for himself in terms of his domestic career, but internationally as well. And Steve mentioned it earlier, it's an unenviable position being behind Alisson Becker in terms of the pecking order, because your chances are only going to become the few and far between anyway, and they're only really going to come if Alisson does go down with an illness or bereavement of his own in the past. So it's not easy. It's definitely not easy. I think we have seen the best of Kevin Callaghan of late, because there's no doubt about it, for 6, 7, 8 months there, it started the last game of last season against Southampton, where he really wasn't at it. But you can kind of put that down to having seen him for weeks, if not months, and obviously his last game of the season, whatever. Let bygones be bygones, let's move on with our lives. But when you watch him earlier on this season, you think, okay, this isn't the Keller I've come to expect here. This isn't right at all. So it's good to see him back at it. It's good to see him back in form. Obviously, in terms of one-on-one, stuff like that, he should be good at them because he's learning from the very best in the business. He should be very good at everything because he's learning from the very best in the business. So I still really like Keith Keller as a goalkeeper. I do think his future sort of lies away from Liverpool. I don't see a world whereby he does become our number one, to be honest. And in terms of a move, he is playing for it. Liverpool want to get good money, I think more than 50 million still, to be honest with you. But that's going to depend and be determined by what he does between now and the end of the season, to be fair. And also, as you say, the type of club they're coming from will be the same, because there's one point whereby we're talking about, could he be Tottenham's number one? Could he replace Hugo Lloris? That's sort of high-end Premier League. And now all of a sudden, the conversation shifted slightly. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens with him. But again, ultimately, I think he's a really talented goalkeeper and somebody who is destined to be a Premier League number one. I just don't think it's at Liverpool.
No, I'd agree. And hopefully, fingers crossed, like I said, get him a bit of confidence going into that League Cup final. Someone else full of confidence, the is Diogo Jota. That's 14 goals in all comps this season now. For a fella who went a year without scoring at one point, he feels like he's back on the goal trail. He's playing on the right wing, of course, but this is a corner. It's a typical poacher's goal. It's anticipating that the goalie might make a mistake. It's what good strikers do. It's not a coincidence that it's him. You know, like, he's the one who reacts first. But yeah, 14 in all comps. He's quietly putting together another excellent season, Jota, in terms of goals.
And whatever we do for the remainder of the season will be largely around his contribution. And he gets in those positions to score goals because positionally he just understands where you need to be. Sometimes he stops his run and everyone else carries on and finds himself in space. He had that one where he sliced it and it popped up and he scored. That was very much evidence of his ability to find space. He's improved his game in so many different ways. I mean, we all sat here a couple of years ago saying, doesn't necessarily get involved in build-up play, isn't great with his back to goal, isn't great when he picks the ball up from deep. But all of those things have come along in leaps and bounds. Mm. For me, he is the standout candidate for the central attacking position, albeit he's playing off the right at the moment because we need to. But he's got that versatility. But whatever Liverpool accomplish between now and the end of the season, however many trophies we win or we don't win, Diogo Jota's got an absolutely huge part to play in that.
He's back, Chloe, to being almost like, well, he is this year, that 1-2 striker. The blip last season, because, you know, his first year he got 13 and 30, so just 1-3-ish, maybe something like that. Then the year after he plays 55 games, scores 21. So again, less than 1-2. 7 from 28 to 22-23 season was when he really had that blip. That's when he went that year. Obviously, he had injuries, but he was coming back, but it took him a long time before he got that goal against Leeds. This season, he scored 14 goals in 27 games. He is back to being like that. He's not Mo Salah levels, because nobody's Mo Salah levels, but if your secondary forward is a 1-2 kind of player, I mean, you're in business there, you know. Sadio Mane's goals needed replacing a little bit, and Jota feels like he's the one. Salah's always going to be the main man, but can somebody be the secondary one? And if Jota, like I say, 1-2 for the rest of the season and he plays another 20 games, he's going to end up roughly mid-20s goals, which is, yeah, fantastic. That's the type of form that Liverpool need. I mean, if they do want to win these trophies, they're chasing.
Yeah, but I think we all could have said that Diogo Jota could do this, but it's about him staying fit. Mm. He is our most ruthless striker. He is the best finisher at Liverpool Football Club. He finds himself in so much space. He reads the play so well. And it was all about, if he stays fit, he could be the reason that Liverpool win trophies. Because, like you mentioned there, you get rid of Sadio Mane, who's a guaranteed 20-plus goal scorer in the Prem, and then you look at Diogo Jota and the signs there, but there isn't enough evidence because he's not fit enough for us. If he can keep fit and we can monitor him throughout the rest of the season, my word, have we got an incredible striker, because he's ridiculous. He doesn't even need half a chance. And it's the way he creates it for himself. It's the way he pulls off the defender and constantly is in the gap to finish the crosses off. And it's just everything about him. His tenacity, his pressing, it's everything. He sets the tone. And yeah, I really hope he can stay fit, because he could be the difference maker. And if you add Mo Salah back into this side, and you've got both of them playing up top together, Liverpool can run away in games. We speak about how the only thing you can say about Manchester City is, in a game where still, you know, it's 1-1 or it's 2-1, or we're still in the games constantly, where City would be 4-0 up 32 minutes in, and it's like, oh, well, they can make all their subs. If you're able to play Darwin Nunes, Diogo Jota and Mo Salah together, you know, you can run away with games. So yeah, he will be vital to Liverpool, and let's hope he can stay fit, because yeah, he's a ridiculous finisher.
He is, he reacts well. He's the only one really who anticipates the goal, making a bit of a meal of that one. On their goal, Dan, let's move on a little bit of a negative. It kind of starts before the corner, really. Mm-hmm. And I know Trent, when he went off and injured at half time, which subsequently, it was like, I listen, I'm in WhatsApp groups and some of you guys are in them as well. It's like, has he injured or has he been hooked here?
Yeah.
Because defensively, he was having a bit of a mare. Trent, on the ball, he was doing well,
yeah,
but defensively, he wasn't. That one there, he's he just loses out in a bit of a basic challenge that he shouldn't really lose, and obviously it leads to Robertson conceding the corner. They score. Liverpool weren't perfect in this game at the back again. You know, they needed the goalkeeper a couple of times. There's a couple of issues like that where Liverpool do have a very good defensive record, but there were still quite a couple of fragilities there.
Yeah, absolutely there was. Yeah, and I think you're right on Trent. I think it was pretty obvious that something wasn't right. I wonder whether it was sort of the flu that was in the camp. Maybe he was suffering from that a little bit, but he sort of cracked on because he wasn't at it. He was far from at it. Obviously, as we know, it turned out he's got that problem again, it sounds like. So no great surprise he didn't look perfect defensively. But yeah, Liverpool weren't walking. To tight, Benny Stretch's imagination though. Obviously, we've already spoke about Kelleher. I think Quant a couple of times has to defend well. Certainly later on in the game, he covers across really nicely. As for the goal, it's an interesting one, the goal. And I got, not criticism, but a little bit of criticism from Jamie on the weekend, because I was like, when you score that type of goal, that manner of goal that comes from a header from, what is it, like 13, 14 yards out, you think, that can't be right. You know what I mean? Like, that doesn't feel right. Like, it's a good header, don't get me wrong. It's right in the corner. Doesn't give Kelleher loads of chance, but should we really be conceding that? I'm not quite sure. I know Vitaro Endo and Diaz are close by, they're in close proximity. Neither of them really get up and compete. It's a good run. It's a good delivery. It's a good leap. It's a good header. But I just think a little bit of me is a bit like, really? Is that how we're going to concede? Do you know what I mean?
I think you said it was a good run. I think that's the problem, Steve, is that it's not a run. They're clever in that they keep the big lads away from our big lads. So our little lads are at the front trying to block them. And there's no one to block. So in the end, what you do, rather than Diaz and Endo and Jota trying to block players from running, they end up having to compete aerial with them. It's very clever from Burnley. But still, you're banking on someone scoring ahead of them 14 yards out or whatever, which again very rarely happens. But it did feel like they decided, well, Van Dijk and Quanta are over there, we'll stay with these little fellas. A couple of teams now have planned set plays well against us and we haven't reacted to them. I think Arsenal did it with Gabriel very early on. They got him free from a marker. These lads here again, albeit further out, free from a marker. We're about to play Brentford next week, and I can promise you now, Thomas Frank's in the lab.
They killed us last year.
They done it last year. They killed us with set plays a couple of times, and he's in the lab this year.
Six from offside positions as well.
It was offside, goal, offside, another goal. Like, it is something Liverpool need to sharpen up on, because like I say, going into next week, Thomas Frank's in the lab now, because did our team score and set piece goals against Liverpool?
Yeah, and it comes down to the Liverpool like to catch people with quick transition from when we win the ball back from corners. So if you've got your diminutive quick players ready to spring from your edge of your box, but how many times have we seen that? West Ham would be sick of that, wouldn't they, after the Shaqiri to Salah goal and stuff like that. You know, it happens a lot with Liverpool. They're probably going to have to rethink that one, because you can only do it so many times before, as you quite rightly say, other teams figure you out tactically, and you know, you wouldn't want to put the ball in an area where Van Dijk is, you wouldn't want to put the ball in an area where Konate isn't, even Quanta's starting to physically impose himself on forwards. Now, they're all big lads, so the delivery has to be right, so credit to them for that, and the timing of it all has to be right. I kind of get your point, it's a long way out, you know, it's not like the Suarez head at that time at the edge of the box, it's like a rocket in the top corner. It's just, it feels like it's a slow-mo goal, doesn't it, and you think, okay, I'm confused by that one, but you kind of have to get, like Steve's saying, they have to kind of give some credit to Burnley for figuring out potentially where the threat is for them from out in set pieces, and it's something we're going to have to address. It, you know, we don't have a 6'3" Fabinho to sit on the edge of the box anymore. You know, we've got Endo's little fella, but equally as effective when we're trying to win the ball back. But
and good in the air as well with it. Just I don't think he anticipated it at all.
The lads a foot bigger than him.
And he's a big lad.
Looking back to it close, so Arsenal, Gabriel scores. Newcastle.
It's Norwich for me.
Norwich.
It's the exact Newcastle, same.
Newcastle, Norwich, Arsenal. Now, Burnley, they've all had a little bit of joy recently from Liverpool on set plays. They've all figured out something, because for a while that was never the case. Liverpool were pretty good. Liverpool just kind of boxed that problem off. It does feel like teams are rightly keeping the ball away from Virgil van Dijk. But this is what happens when everyone gets onto something. It spreads very, very quickly. Tottenham are half dealing with that now with Vicario. Teams have gone on to the fact that let's just bully him and see if we can get something out of him, and they'll have joy. It does feel like I say, Norwich with the centre-back. You got Botman for Newcastle. Now you've got here, you've got Gabriel. Like, centre-half are scoring goals against Liverpool. All of a sudden, that's happened since probably the end of December now. It's a bit of a concern.
Yeah, it is. And like I mentioned there, the Norwich one, it just feels like it's the exact same
very
as that.
Yeah.
And Liverpool need to address it and they need to adjust. It doesn't need to be a massive adjustment. It doesn't need to be, yeah, I'll rob Canata at the front post. It doesn't need to be that. But maybe, like you mentioned there, Diaz and Endo, they're not bad in the air. They're actually quite good.
Yeah. Since Arsenal have scored against those, don't they?
Yeah.
Diop scored, didn't he, for Fulham for that one as well?
Yeah, he did.
Have a little bit of a go, yeah.
So Liverpool do need to address it and we do need to, you know, adjust because it's the old cliche, but set pieces really, really are game changers. And when you're coming up against Brentford, who scored around 3 last season in their game, but also about 10, including the offside ones, it is a massive worry, especially with the fact that they've got Ivan Toney back and they're in this kind of feel-good moment because it feels like they're back. So yeah, Liverpool do need to address it. We need to make sure that front post is, you know, I don't know whether we block the players off. I don't know whether we have to man mark. I don't know what it is that we need to switch because I'm obviously not the person to do the analysis on that. But we just need to make it tougher for people to be winning ads.
I think it comes down to
you look at, we lost Gravenberch right at the last minute and the number of players coming in and out of those zones week on week where they're not familiar with their jobs. So it might be that we look at it and say, right, because we don't man mark. You might be right. We might go man mark the man on the front post. With someone huge so we can't flick it or get anything on it, and then everyone else has got to be alive. So when we're going through all the permutations of players and systems and different bodies in different places, it's just you're not there every week doing that, so it's difficult to understand what your role is. So zonal marking's always been a problem for Liverpool since we started to do it, really. We've given a lot of goals away from set pieces, so I think it's a bit of that, and it's a bit of the fact that it's not the same bodies every week at the moment.
I also think as well, like, it's just kind of one of those things. You mentioned Gravenberch can't play. There's no Gakpo on the pitch.
Yeah.
Like, Liverpool short. Like, Gakpo played midfield against Brentford the last couple of times we've played them.
Yeah.
Would not be shocked if he's in the team starting at the weekend as well. Like, when you, he might not be in midfield. He might be in the forward line somewhere because Liverpool's effectively front six. I mean, Curtis isn't small, but he's not massive. The rest of them are all pretty short lads, so that probably played into it as well. If that's Gakpo or Gravenberch maybe defending that near post, they might get a bit more of a challenge on the lad, but yeah, it is what it is in that regard. But I definitely think keep an eye on Gakpo starting at the weekend because Jürgen Klopp's done that against Thomas Frank teams in the past. Half time then, Dan, I'll come to you. Trent's got an issue, reoccurrence.
Yep.
He said he was fine, but Jürgen said, no, you're not. You're obviously not fine. If you told me about it, we don't want to take no risks. We've had no word yet on how bad it was. Liverpool probably keep that quiet. They've got no need to really talk about it. There's no midweek game, so it could be later in the week until Jürgen, and rightly so, lets us know what's happening with Alexander-Arnold. So, interesting that he goes with the change he makes, because there's no right back on the pitch, but there are other defensive options available for Jürgen to go with. But the fact that it's 1-1, do you think that's probably why it's Curtis? I'm guessing if that header had just gone over the bar and if Liverpool was 1-0 at half time, Endo might be at right back, or Quanta might be at right back, or Timokas or Robertson or something. Do you think that it's the fact that it's 1-1 means, you know what, that's why we'll probably go Curtis? Because we need to win this game, we need goals rather than keeping the back door closed.
Yeah, quite possibly. I think that is a very understandable change to make in those circumstances, because you expect Liverpool to be dominant in terms of territory, in terms of possession, so having another attack minded player at right back isn't necessarily the end of the world, because you're going to find yourself in very advanced areas. As we mentioned before, Curtis Jones is now converted from left winger to right back, which is just ludicrous, and it's testament to his ability to sort of play in different
roles. He's like every British person in the south, just starts on the left and it's
right
worked right all the way on the right hand side.
Stop in the middle for a it's testament just how well he understands duties and takes on instructions actually from managers, the fact he can do that. He did it earlier on the season in the Leicester game in the Carabao Cup. He started that game as captain at right back, so he has done it before, but it's not exactly second nature to him, let's put it that way. But I was a little bit surprised by the change, obviously, in terms of, as soon as you find out Trent's injured and needs to come off or has a problem and needs to come off, it's not a great shock that we make a change. But I would have thought Wataru Endo might have come off because he was on a booking, and it's testament to how good he was second half, the fact you were never panicking about him being on a yellow card. But given the fact he just got back from the Asian Cup, he'd been yellow card in the first, you think, okay, there's an obvious change here. It's Harvey Elliott comes on for Endo, you move McAllister back to the six and you crack on from there. You've still got your creative force in McAllister, Elliott and Jones on the pitch, so it wouldn't have made too much of a difference. sense of sort of the impetus of the game and the way it was going. But listen, Klopp makes a change he makes and it works relatively well. I think it's safe to say Curtis Jones wasn't tested massively from a defensive standpoint, which is really important. And that might be down to Elliot helping him out a little bit on that side as well. Who knows? But had we have been up against different opposition again, it comes back to what you said before about fixture list being relatively kind. You can't afford to make those tweaks that are far from ideal in a game like Burnley at home. If that's Man City away and all of a sudden you end up with Curtis Jones at right back against Jamie Docker, you're thinking this is going to be a long 45. Love you, Curtis, think you're boss, but it's going to be a long 45 minutes this. So relatively kind in the way it fell.
Absolutely. Chloe, you obviously texted us from the stadium at the time, giving us updates, you and Paul, and it was like, right, I can see obviously now Harvey Elliott stripped off, and the obvious thought was it's probably Endo. He's on a yellow. He didn't have a particularly good first half, Endo. He'd got himself booked with the latest of late challenge. He was that late.
What was annoying about that one? We should have had a free kick 20 seconds earlier. Yeah. Nunes was dragged to the deck like 5 seconds earlier, and then Endo gives away a free kick and gets booked. And that could have all been avoided.
It could, but he was also that late for that tackle. He was nearly early for the next one.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But you know what? Yeah. When that happened in the stadium, everyone on the cop was like, you know what, Dan? I like it because he makes sure that he's good.
We weren't fouling players last season. That was half the problem.
I'm don't want to put words in anyone's mouths, but the last thing anyone expected was that was going to be the sub. It turns out, obviously, Alexander Arnold was injured. But either way, getting Elliott on the pitch, Chloe, was another winner for Liverpool because, again, 2 assists, another place off the bench, another appearance off the bench where he's been brilliant. And actually, it got McAllister a bit deeper, closer to Endo. They were able to get a bit more control of midfield as well. It probably wasn't planned. I don't think, it wasn't. Diego would never want to have. He might have wanted to get Elliott on. The way he got him on might have been different. But again, it's just another game where Harvey Elliott stepped up off the bench and delivered for Liverpool.
He must be thinking to himself, I can't do anymore. Because he's literally, every single time he's came off the bench, he's constantly had a positive impact and he's constantly won us the game. And maybe, you know, a couple of years ago where we were all like, is Jota better as a sub than as... Maybe that this is the conversation we're having with Harvey Elliott, because he's looking up and he's seeing Brentford next and he's thinking, nope, I'm not starting that game because I'm about 5 points.
Not a chance.
Yeah. So when he comes on, he's thinking to himself, well, even if I don't get the next start, this is my club, I'm top of the league, and he understands, he knows what it means to be a Liverpool fan, and he drags us, he puts us on his back at times. And yeah, the second ball to Nunes is great, but Nunes' finish is ridiculous. But it's just, it was the fact that it just felt like the game was really scrappy. Harvey Elliott comes on and says, give me the ball and I'll just do everything. He calms it down, he passes it around the corner, 1-2s, gives and goes. And he also defensively really helped Curtis Jones out as well. So yeah, it's another superb impact that he's had from the bench. And he's looked up and he saw Brentford and he's thought, yeah, okay, so I'll probably be a sub again next weekend. But as long as he just keeps coming off the bench and impacting games, that's all he can do. And hopefully he will get his chance. It just sadly not in a game where there's a load of 6'4" lads and you're 5'6".
So I'll say, Steve, because obviously for those who don't know, Steve used to manage that non-league levels before in your previous days. Is it hard if there's a player who's so good as a sub? Because to be fair, like when Elliott starts, he hasn't been that impressive. He's played 98 games for Liverpool now, 98 appearances. A lot of those have come, of course, off the bench. But like you're half tempted to reward him and say, you know what, you've been starting that well. You've been playing that well, but here's a start. It might not be next week. Brentford, obviously, is an outlier. But in other games, like this one, for example, he could easily have started this one, barely at home. But because he's so good off the bench, it must be nice as a manager to go, it's great that I've got this fellow on the, who I know I can trust to come on as a sub. Solskjaer used to get this at United, that super sub role. We had Davy Fairclough, different roles, obviously goal scorers. Yeah, but as a manager, is it like a bit of a comfort blanket to go, why would I start him? Because he's so good off the bench, he's almost... Harvey now made like a rod for his own back almost by being so good as a substitute.
It's exactly that, because you sometimes look at your bench, you can be 2-0 down, and depending on who's available, you look at your bench and think, they can't change it. And then you lose a game 3-4-0 and you think, oh, the subs don't have to have the bollock in at the end of the game because they weren't included in it. The thing with Elliott is we have given him starts and it's not the same. I think where we benefit from him is he comes on the pitch, he's great at listening to instructions, he's great at doing the things he's supposed to do. after about an hour, when we're starting to tire and we start to lose our way a little bit, he comes on and gives everybody a reminder of what we should be doing. So that's ball into feet, get it out of your feet, move it quickly, look forward, lots of angles, lots of creativity. He probably wouldn't thank you for saying he's a super sub, but the reality is he is at the moment. I don't know how that changes, because we go back to Dan's point before, when everybody's fit, he's not getting in ahead of Szoboszlai, because the thing that people don't realise is Szoboszlai is that off the ball, he's as good as anybody in recovery and interceptions and stuff like that. So that physicality is huge down that right-hand side for Liverpool. So I feel for him, because he's a really, really good player. Sometimes footballers understand what their role is in the club, and they accept it in the short to medium term. And it seems to be that's what he's done, because there's no hang-up, is there? You know, we don't play him, and then he comes on as a sub and he's brilliant. And then the next week he comes on a sub and he's brilliant. And it's really nice from a tactical point of view, and you're looking at it and thinking, you know, take for instance the week before when we went with the two Dutch lads on the right, that didn't work, but there's an option on the bench to bring someone in who's fresh and going to do things differently and give you an impetus. So if you're not going the way you want it to go, you're looking at the what's in front of you and you're thinking, got to change something, to turn around and see that fella on your bench, knowing what he's going to give you as a manager, is massive. And it changes all of your perspectives in terms of what you can do going forward to try and rescue a game or turn a game in your favour and take some control. And he's just a lovely little footballer, really, isn't he, to watch?
You know what I really enjoyed from the weekend? It was a switch of play.
Yes,
constantly. He probably did that more times in that one game than I've seen him do it all the season.
Every game we play.
And Robertson was, the Diaz was being marked, but Robertson was always the extra man. And every time it was pinpoint, it was take a touch and whip it in. And I thought he was excellent at that as well, which is something I've not seen him do loads of, is the switcher play, but he every single time he had that ball, comment,
he's very intelligent. It's from connoisseur. Yeah. You know, he watches the game and understands what he can do, and that's exactly what it feels like, Dan, is that he gets it. He must be really good at taking instruction, because I'm guessing half of this comes from the manager and the coaches that were also just picking out, right, there's a load of space over there, my job in this game might be to play that diagonal as often as I can. It's interesting because I'm looking at his stats here from his Liverpool career. I mentioned before he played 98 games. Mm-hmm. Only in 20 of those has he played the full 90 minutes.
Yep.
He's either come off the bench 45 times or he's gone off 33 times. There you go, 78. So he's only played 20 minutes. So he played 90 minutes 20 times, rather.
Yeah.
But speaking of 20, he is only 20.
Exactly that.
And that's the thing, I suppose. If this is a 25, 26, 27-year-old in the prime of their career, they could be going to the manager, what do I have to do?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what can I do? But because he's 20, you can say, listen, we're looking after you. There's plenty to go. There's more to come. And also, you're 20 and you play 98 times for Liverpool Football Club. Like, it makes it an easier conversation than if it's a fella in his mid-20s, 30s who goes, right, I'm playing better than all of these lads and you're still not picking me.
Yeah.
I suppose that makes it a little bit easier for Jürgen, because at some point, now it's not going to be Jürgen Klopp, we know that he's leaving, but at some point, if Harvey's doing this, there is a conversation where he has to say, listen, I need to be in the team here, because what more can I possibly be doing?
Yeah, of course there is. Yeah, and he's spoken about it himself in terms of he wants to be starting games. Of course he does. You'd have questions if he wasn't saying them sort of things, wouldn't you? If he was quite happy in his role, then you would be saying, well, hang on, what are you up to then? But no, absolutely, he's been incredible so far this season, mainly from the bench, as you've all mentioned. But as you say there, he's only 20, he's got 98 Liverpool appearances so far. That's some go in that, especially when you factor in he's had a season out on loan at Blackburn in amongst that. He's had a bad ankle break in amongst that as well. So they really, you know, they had to be very, very careful with development. But he's an absolute superstar, absolute talent. He really is. Liverpool call him their diamond and stuff like that. But he's got so, so many positives. But one of his major strengths at the minute is the fact he's able to analyse games and work out what's required when he comes on. And he offers so much energy. So he mentions what he offers to our lads, and he sort of sets the tone and shows them the way to go about it as well. But on the flip side of that, defenders have been run ragged by XYZ Liverpool player. And then Harvey Elliott comes on. He's not going to give you a minute peaks. We all wax Liverpool about Darwin Nunes and how much of a nightmare he can be for defenders. Harvey Elliott, similar, because he does not stop from the minute he gets on the pitch to the minute he goes off. He's 100% committed to everything he does, and that's hard work to deal with. So I'm delighted with Harvey Elliott. I think he will, like I say, he will be clamouring, whether it be sort of within or whether it be outwardly to the people around him, he'll be clamouring to start more games of footy. But the godsend is right now for Liverpool, if we were out of the FA Cup and out of the Carabao Cup earlier on this season, you'd have gone, where's Harvey Elliott getting his footy? And if we were playing playing Champions League footy, for example, you'd have gone, I'm not quite sure where he gets his minutes here, but as it is, we're fighting all four fronts, so there's minutes for all these lads.
Yeah.
We're talking about the academy kids coming in. We wouldn't have seen as much of Joel Quanta, Connor Bradley, etc., etc., were it not for this quadruple bid that we're on. So thankfully, there's enough minutes to be shared around between everyone, and Harvey Elliott deserves his fair share with him because he's been brilliant this season.
No, absolutely. I think you're right. He did. He will. I think he got named man of the match by Liverpool.
Yeah.
And he played half the game, which is how good he was. We'll lump these two questions in together. I'll start with you, Chloe. Diaz gets another goal. He's in a little bit of form here now. Darwin gets another goal. So yeah, two very different headers, but two very good headers given the circumstances. Diaz is as good in the fact that it's a weird angle, and he's on a slide in,
yeah,
and that deflection kind of bobbles up, and he has to kind of lean back. Darwin uses the neck muscles. But both of them are in relatively good goal scoring form now. You know, Darwin, obviously, we know what's happening with Darwin. He's hit and miss, to say the least. Diaz has got himself in a little bit of a purple patch. But you said at the very start of the show, you know, Liverpool got the firepower to outgun everybody. That is true, especially if these two are scoring, because these, you know, and Gakpo's on 9 goals as well. Like, everybody's chipping in. It does feel like you are right in that, aren't you? Like, you know, Liverpool do have the firepower, whichever option you use. The knock on Diaz has been the numbers. Well, he's in the last month, he started delivering those numbers now, the goals, which is, yeah, fantastic. I'd like to say, if Liverpool are going to go on time, win as many of these trophies as they can, they're going to need, think, those two players in particular, finding the back of the net. So again, another welcome sight that they both did so.
Yeah, look, Diaz has been improving. He's still not back to his best, but he's, you know, creating things. He's dragging defenders away and creating the spaces for the overloads. And yeah, I thought that the thing I love about Diaz is defensively his work rate as well. I don't think he gets enough credit for that, because the amount of times he's running 30 yards back, busting a gut to try and really help us out to win that ball back, so then we can start another attack. And he deserved his goal. He was everywhere, and it's a great goal, because the ball, like you said, he's not expecting the ball to go there. The ball bobbles up and he has to adjust, and it's instinct to him. And he ends up not, it's like he doesn't celebrate. And for like 5 minutes of his celebration, I'm thinking, are we offside? Yeah, why has he not gone mental? Because he
went mental on goal.
He
took all his frustration out on the net.
The
net got it, and then it's wandered out the net.
It was dead cool by the time he walked out.
It was like when my kids do them, yeah, then sometimes I just walk into the bathroom and just go, like an internal scream, and then just
so
walk
out. Time.
It's like, net, punch you, and then I was like, Sam, we're all right, we chill now. And then Darwin's the complete opposite. He went nuts when he's good.
Like, you mentioned Darwin there, and I had to laugh, because what instantly came into my mind was this lovely ball over the top by Endo. The touch is perfect.
So we have the goalie.
Just slide it, bottom bins either side, lad, and it's a goal. And he does all hard work, and the thing that he's so good at, he just puts it straight to the goalkeeper.
So he's
and
he's
like,
well,
what are you doing? And yeah, his header is phenomenal. And I thought it at the time, what a header. Mm. But the more times you see it, the better it gets. He has to generate the power there. The ball is behind him. He's got a man glued to him as well. And yeah, look, he deserved his goal as well. I thought he was feeding off absolute scraps all game, but yet was still so heavily involved, especially in the second half. Obviously, we see the Robertson one where it's offside, yeah, but if it was onside, there's not much more he could do in terms of the actual finish. It's a great save.
A good finish, actually. Yeah, it's weird.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I love the fact that Darwin Núñez is still getting the goals, because, like we always say, he feels like a confidence player. And what a header it was. What a finish it was. He went absolutely mad. He's loving it, and if he can keep doing that every game, if he can keep having these impacts on games, then, you know, is slots there for him to play. And it was just literally perfect touch. What control! You're in acres of space straight down the keeper's throat, and we're all like, oh my
it's just mental.
There was a lad behind me who had a bet on, who just needed Darwin Núñez to hit it on target, and it was on target. So all of us are going, how on earth he's done this, and the lad behind me is celebrating because he's won a bet.
That's a risky bet to say Darwin shot on target, you know. Darwin shots is fine, but shots on target, you best be giving decent odds out for that one. Yeah, I love him, like, he's fantastic.
He's unbelievable.
He drives you insane as well at the same time. So they are coming to you very quickly. We'll talk more about like Arsenal, Manchester City in depth later. We're doing the Bias Football podcast immediately after this over on redmenplus.com. But just a quick look at the league table. Everybody kind of held serve, really. Arsenal had the trickiest game and they've done well. Obviously, they battered West Ham. Man City got the job done. We knew that against Everton. Liverpool should be Burnley, and you expect Liverpool to be Burnley, but it was a case of, okay, that's just another game ticked off for everybody where the points don't change, which isn't the worst for Liverpool, really, given that they are top of the league at the moment. We had probably on paper the easiest of those games, so it was imperative they got the job done. And given the fact that injuries, suspensions, illness, bereavement, etc., it was a case of, right, a job well done there, and we just move on. There's 14 left now, because there was every chance there that you had every excuse not to win that game if you wanted to use it, and Liverpool didn't use any of those excuses. They found a way.
No, and that's the thing, you know, given where we are in the league and the fact that we've got two people breathing down our necks, and some of these lads haven't been in this position before, and those that have gone 90 points three times and, you know, come up short, and they still know how to get the job done. As Van Dijk said after the game, you know, we'll concentrate on what we do, and we'll make sure we win our games, and that's all you can do. I'm not so sure that the club itself has the same hang up as the fans do about what other teams are doing.
We're insane, aren't we?
No.
I really hope they don't.
They're in trouble if they have, because they're not sleeping.
If they're watching Man City Everton 15 minutes before kickoff, and they're in trouble.
It's you know, they'll say, teams say you take it one game at a time. That's just to dampen down the conversation, because you look at games of blocks. So you look at your next six fixtures, for instance, from the 1st of February to the middle of March, before something gets in the way, like a European competition or an international break across the season, and you want to accumulate points within that section. You do that right down to the level I manage that. You look at blocks and you say, right, those are games we want to win, and Burnley is a game we want to win, but there's no easy games in the Premier League anymore, as Luton are proving with, you know, they bucked the trend, haven't they? And they've started getting a few results. So it's going to be like this till the end of the season, and all we can do is if we win all of our games between now and the end of the season, we win the league. It's a big ask, and, you know, it'd be nice to do that, wouldn't it? There'll be many twists and turns, I'm sure, but these lads finding ways to get games done when they're not playing very well, that should have been a banker. You know, if you're doing an accumulator, you look down the list, Liverpool, Burnley, tick, isn't it? You know, but they're fighting for their lives. They're fighting to prove that even if they do go down, they've got to give these lads something to build on next season, to say, we want some more of that. We at times we acquitted ourselves quite well. So we'll go to Anfield, which is, if you've never been in the Premier League before, and lots of Burnley lads haven't, you look at the calendar and you go, Liverpool, Anfield, I'm turning up for that one. You know, they don't need any reason to motivate themselves. And there is the added factor that companies are Man City guy, you know what I mean?
His record on Anfield's still shite.
Genuinely
it is. Oh yeah, absolutely.
I mean, yeah, but ultimately, you know, these games are difficult, and we find teams that win the league find a way when things aren't going well, and little gems like Harvey Elliott go a long way to solving those problems, don't they?
Absolutely, yeah, Liverpool did get the job done. Right then, before we head to a break, we did have a super chat from Jared Freeman. Thanks very much, Jared. Says, Jota has 75 goals or assists in 8,259 minutes. Correct. Oh, yes, yeah, so that a goal or an assist every 110 minutes or so Jota's got in his Liverpool career. And bear in mind, he did go a year without scoring as well. Yeah, just so Jared's highlighting the importance of Jota.
Goals as well, all the time with Jota.
You don't need to big up the Diogo Jota on this panel, trust me. I think you might have his four biggest fans in the world on these coaches, and I'm including this family in that. Did I say coaches?
Yeah.
Oh, don't pay. You know, before, length. Right, you said AFCON for
and then
Endo,
you didn't pick up on it.
And I didn't pull you up on it. So I thought, you know what, that'll be nice. And the second time you spoke, you jumped down my throat. So fuck off, you said AFCON, and he's Asian.
If someone in the comments could put Swan, Chloe, Steve and Dan, Steve P, that is, and just not include Steve Hall, that'd be great as well.
Honestly,
two down the comments now.
Honestly, God.
And you didn't forget it, though, did you?
No,
He parked it just in case.
That was in the holster for me before.
Sorry, it was because you mentioned Halle before, and I was like, AFCON's on my brain now.
It doesn't matter. Couch, at least couch sounds like coach.
Different tournaments.
Yeah, different contents. Yeah, there you go. Sam's delivered. There you go. Nice one to Chloe, Steve P, and Dan.
Thank you.
That is the in joke of in jokes, isn't it?
The WhatsApp voice note the other week, wasn't it? That was the one.
Someone gave us massive feedback on the channel and said, thanks to Dan, Chris, Paul and Chloe for all the hard work to do it. And I was like,
I didn't even get onto it. I just forwarded it to like our group. Yeah. And then he realised his name wasn't on
also,
it.
Also, someone go and watch the Bobby Firmino doc. There's not a single part of Steve Horne in that either.
Honestly, I'm like, maybe a niche reference, but like, you know, the little green fella off Monsters Inc. when they keep putting like stickers over his head or like he's behind the thing. That's me at the moment. I'm like, the forgotten man.
Yeah,
the good part is it doesn't bother me at all, and I never bring it up.
My ego
is so small that I never even have to mention it once.
All the time.
That WhatsApp is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. I absolutely despise it, and I'm a man who's gone bald.
It's wonderful.
That's yeah. So anyway, we're moving on.
Blake, it was Blake.
He's from Japan, Asia, just to let you know, probably. Before we do, move on. Right there, in part two, we are going to speak about Liverpool's squad. We're going to do a little bit of a squad sit rep. We're going to look at the injuries, who's available, who's not, who's out, the impact that's going to have, who we need to get back, all of that good stuff. Before we get to it, I want to give you guys a shout about our League Cup content, which is absolutely fantastic. I think would you agree?
Yes, brilliant. Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. There's
past
loads
and present, really good.
Past and present, loads of it. So yeah, check out all the amazing League Cup final content. Let's go with the content. All the amazing League Cup final content that we've got on offer, and we'll be back with part two in just a couple of minutes.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
We are on the way to Wembley for the League Cup final. What better way to get prepared, educate yourself about Liverpool's historic relationship with the League Cup than over on redmenplus.com. The League Cup story, telling the entire history in podcast form of the Reds' illustrious 9 victories.
Liverpool Football Club were the best team in not only in England, but in Europe.
We've had bigger things and better things to celebrate in recent years, but that day, it felt massive.
It wasn't about football, it was about something more.
There is Squad Game, a standalone documentary looking at Liverpool's last win in the League Cup final in that 0-0 and then penalty shootout victory over Chelsea.
Starting Kelleher in goal immediately made the goalkeepers the story of the game.
If there's a trophy and a medal to be celebrated, Liverpool know how to celebrate it.
It's always a big deal to win a trophy.
Another fabulous documentary, The 6-Year Wait, going all the way back to 2001, the treble season, to look at how the Worthington Cup was captured.
A campaign that saw Liverpool play in every match possible, in every tournament they entered, coming away with the League Cup, the FA Cup, the UEFA Cup, and for the first time ever,
qualification for the Champions League.
From us winning that first trophy, that absolutely got the lads' belief that they were good enough to compete.
Safe hands, a featurette about Liverpool's goalkeeper mural that was updated after the 2022 win with a wonderful etching of Quíven Kelleher.
But the boss always said, yeah, we play the number two goalie, but most clubs, they change the final and go back to the number one goalie, which would be a bit unfair.
And lots more besides that as well. Head over to redmenplus.com for more features, interviews, podcasts and analysis as we head to Wembley to try and bring home League Cup number 10.
Yeah, there you go. Get yourselves ready for Wembley over on redmenplus.com. Some amazing documentaries, features, interviews, and just released yesterday was part 6 of the League Cup stories. Yes, 6-part docu-series all about Liverpool's League Cup triumphs. There's 9 wins in total. Episode 1 is the first 4 when Liverpool decided they were going to turn up in the League Cup and start winning them, so they won 4 in a row. You've got the 1995 win, 2001, 2003, obviously 2012, and then the latest one, 2022, with some fabulous journalists who were covering the Reds at the time. So go and check that one out. James Pearce is the latest subject in the 2022 one, of course. A Tale of Two Keepers, Keith Kelleher, Kepa, and all that great stuff. So yeah, get yourselves ready for Wembley with redmenplus.com. Wembley will take care of itself for the Reds, Chloe, as it gets there. Who knows what Liverpool's squad's going to look like when it does get there, because there's a couple more games before then, and at this rate it really is a revolving door. We're getting some back, we're losing some. It's been a very, very difficult in terms of squad management for Jürgen. If he wants to rest players, he hasn't been able to, all that kind of stuff. We'll start with Thiago. He played 9 minutes against Arsenal and he felt some discomfort in a muscle. The scan, it turns out something's gone wrong with that. Now Jürgen didn't say he's out for the season. Some reports suggested he was. Jürgen kind of said, no, we don't think that, no, that's not the case. It'll be what it'll be. It was for a while in the lead up to that Arsenal game. We all saw the videos, the clips, the LFC TV, the twist and the turn and the shot. He comes on against Arsenal, doesn't play centre half for 9 minutes.
Plays an absolute horrific ball.
Yeah, does that. Now he's out again. Now, I can't sit here and say Liverpool are going to miss Thiago because they haven't had him. But any hope of, you just sprinkle Thiago into this and it could be even better, it feels like that's gone now, because if he's out for a couple of months now, I mean, by the time he's back, maybe it is April, but you're really in the business end and just trust him at that point. It is a shame, really, because on his day he's been fantastic, but his body has just continued to let him down, and there's no surprises, unfortunately, that he's out after 9 minutes. Just no. When that news come down, it was more a case of,
yeah,
I can't believe it. Right, not sorry. More a case
water's
of
water's wet.
Inevitability. There was no massive shock. It was more a case of, oh my god, how bad does look kind of thing. But yeah, no one was surprised. Chloe, this is what we've got now. Thiago's Liverpool career is going to end this summer, and it's going to end on the back of a season where he just couldn't get himself on the pitch.
Yeah, he sees a footy pitch and all he has to do is see it and he's injured. It's silly. And look, he looked incredible in those training videos. And you do need a play. It felt great because Manchester City had just got Kevin De Bruyne back, and Kevin De Bruyne has had a major impact in every single game he's came on or started since then. And you just thought with Thiago, imagine we've ran these teams ragged for 70, and then we just go, yeah, Maka, have a little rest there, lad. Oh, here's Thiago. Ridiculous. We'd have been in dreamland, but we don't get those luxuries because he can't stay fit. And it is silly. I mean, sadly, Thiago is possibly the best technician I have seen play for Liverpool. And yet, he's not going to be remembered for me anything more than the fact that he literally missed more games than he played. And I love him and I wish he could have some, and he still might have some impact in this run, and hopefully he can. But it's just, it's getting boring because you can't even like, I think we all sat here and said, yeah, he'll play for two games and then he'll be out again. We did expect 9 minutes though, lads, in a game that was pretty much dead anyway, because Konaté got a red card 2 seconds later. They went down the other end and scored the third. So yeah, it felt bad, especially after City get those big players back. Arsenal beat us, and yet we don't get the luxury. He is a luxury. He's not a player who you're going to play 2 games, 3 games on the bounce, but he was a luxury, and it would have been incredible to have that luxury, and we don't. And yeah, there's not much else to say. I expected it, just not that soon.
It's interesting, Dan, he played 30 games in his first season, 39 and 28, so not loads, but also it's not none. You know what I mean? Like, he did decent, but he was never, you know, Liverpool played 50 games and stuff, and so yeah. He wasn't always available. Is there a question to be asked now, because this is the third player in very recent times to come back and suffer? We don't know if it's a different injury or a reoccurrence, but Szoboszlai did it, came back exact same, pretty much out. Yep. Thiago back, Trent Alexander-Arnold's knee, he's been back, he's back again. It might just be bad luck. It might just be, we're not doctors, we don't know, and Liverpool have got the best doctors, or, you know, they do all this stuff, they are very diligent with injuries. But this is now the third fella who's come back and gone again very, very quickly. There should be alarm bells ringing, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And they're going to be more guarded in when they bring players back, you would imagine, from here on out. Certainly when it comes to Trent and Szoboszlai, obviously, yet to be known, sort of, the prognosis on Thiago and how long it will be. But listen, if we see him again this season, I think we'll be quite fortunate, to be honest with you. It's a shame, as Chloe alludes to, because one of the greatest footballers to watch, in my opinion, in my lifetime at Liverpool. Just so well decorated, so experienced, been there, done that, absolute joy to watch, and the type of player you pay the admission fee just to watch play.
Man United, the game still goes down.
Oh, it's phenomenal. A masterclass, an absolute masterclass, and just a real shame, because it did feel like, I've been banging on this drum all season long, if we can sort of stay within touching distance, stay in front, whatever it may be, and just keep fighting, and then you can drop Thiago in as and when you please, my God, that's an absolute luxury of all luxuries. But that isn't going to be the case, unfortunately. But coming back to sort of Liverpool's injury dilemma in that sense, yeah, maybe there is an element of not rushing players back, and, you know, the club would absolutely stand steadfast against that, and rightfully so, but maybe there is an eagerness, and Steve referenced it earlier on, like, these players are going to be fighting for this cause more than ever before because of the Klopp factor. So is there an element of some of these players just desperate to get the place back in the team and desperate to go out there and put a shift in because they want to do it for Liverpool Football Club and for Jurgen Klopp? And maybe in Szoboszlai's case, we even said it with Trent before, he at half time, he's got a problem, but he was like, no, I'm fine, I'll carry on, and that decision's had to be taken out of his hands. So are they rushing back ever so slightly just because they want to be playing? And the that if they are out for 3 or 4 weeks, somebody else is going to come in and take their place and take the shirt. And we've seen it in the past with Curtis Jones. He's come in, played so well, you can't drop him. And different players have done that in the round, it seems. So are they worried about the place in the starting 11? Are they so desperate to fight for this quadruple? We've seen Trent talking about it in recent weeks and how much he wants to send Klopp out on a high. So maybe all them factors are just contributing to players just being a little bit over-eager to get back into playing football, which is a great problem and it's a good thing. You want players to be chomping at the bit. But at the same time, is that causing these problems and is having this knock-on effect that we're seeing? Because you're right, the trend of two key players in the prime of their career, in Trent and Szoboszlai's case, coming back and then getting injured in the same manner is a little bit concerning, I would say.
Szoboszlai, we'll see. Jürgen said it could be this week, could be next week, we'll find out. We'll talk about Salah in a moment, Chloe. On the Trent thing, that was the down from the weekend, we'll see. Last time he got this knee injury, it was against Arsenal, he missed like a month. Now, listen, don't get me wrong, Conor Bradley's been fantastic, and hopefully Conor's set to join back in training this week, which is fantastic, but still, Trent. And there's a school of thought that you can get them. You can play both of them. Trent can go into midfield if you need him to. You can do whatever you want. You can rotate them in and out. Again, at time record, we don't know exactly where we're at with Alexander-Arnold, but again, one back, one in, one out. It's just another example of that, really, and knees are tricky, knees worry you slightly, you don't know exactly what's gone wrong, that kind of stuff. But Jürgen kind of hinted that it was a reoccurrence of the same issue, which is never a positive.
Yeah, and you don't want to put any pressure on Conor Bradley because, you know, we looked at that bench, we didn't have a right back at all, and that Arsenal game, we heavily missed Conor Bradley. We missed Conor Bradley the other day in terms of the fact that we wouldn't have had to push Trent to go again, and maybe that wouldn't have caused the reoccurrence that happened.
Maybe he wasn't going to play. Gomez, exactly. We don't know, do we?
Exactly. So yeah, it's a tough one to take, especially because he is the one who can change a game. He's the one that, from the right back position, has all the influence on the rest of the team. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's hopefully it's not for long, because not dealing with in that period where Conor Bradley came in, it felt like we were, you know, we were still on top, we had the momentum, all of these things, but now it's a different prospect because City are also on top, and it's also in City's hands now. So there is more pressure. It's coming down to the final running, you know. So players, you don't want to put that pressure on Conor Bradley, and you don't want to make him come back if he's not ready, because he shouldn't be. He should be allowed the time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, hopefully we won't, and hopefully Trent will be back soon. But yeah, it feels like one in, one out, one in, one out, one in, two out. I mean, it was the thing with Thiago. It was like, look, we have all of, no, we don't. No, and Sobo, we don't have either. But yeah, let's try and keep everyone fit and try and monitor them all as quick as possible, because you've got to have a big squad to get through the last end of the season while still being in four competitions.
Mm. They're the negatives, unfortunately. There's maybe a couple of positives. I'm going to start, by the way, this is just my comment, I don't know if you guys agree. Whoever was at Conor Bradley's dad's funeral taking photos of him, get fucked.
Don't get that.
It was absolutely horrendous. Like, the press putting photographs of that out was absolutely abhorrent, and I'm disgusted by it. But it looks like he's going to come back in this week. Jürgen said, all being well. He was still away. The manager slammed down the question of the guy who said to him, like, how's Conor's mentality and all that kind of stuff. Jürgen wasn't having none of that. He just said, he's, you know, don't worry about it, but he's due to come back and training this week. So if he's well, and but bearing that in mind, if he's well and right, and I hope he is, he will be a good addition to Liverpool. He'll be a big addition, because it felt like we've seen a lot of Liverpool players, young players, come in and make a mark on teams, and he was very much on the trajectory of the best of them. They're the type of impacts, like the great Liverpool players you've had, you know, they've come in and you automatically stood out. And you might not have expected it from Conor Bradley, you know, given he's been on loan, he signed from Northern Ireland, he's been on loan at Bolton, but he come in and he had a start to almost like perfect to him. If he does come back in, there's a very good chance he goes straight into the team against Brentford, and I'm sure he'll play well. That could be, especially if Alexander-Arnold's out, it could be a massive boost if he's well enough, hopefully he is. And if he's not, it's absolutely fine, but provided he is, could be a welcome return, because he was fantastic.
Well, he's grown in every game he's played, hasn't he? He's developed and gone on and done better things. You know, the goal against Chelsea's a really good finish. All of that, the move, the run, getting the ball out to strike it across the goal is really clever. We have a different balance when he's playing, when Trent's playing, but we seem defensively better balanced. That won't surprise you, because we're asking Trent to step forward and do things. We spoke about it, I think we did a final word recently, Steve, and we talked about where Arteta played Kai Havertz to negate the stepping into midfield for Trent, because there was no space to do it. Bradley's more of an orthodox, I'll go around the outside of you get me in type of right back. So, you know, the filling in for him is very different. I'm not suggesting that's the right way to go, but by all means, but it's a different dynamic and it's a different balance in the team. And if it's not him, Joe Gomez is available, then there is now cover down that right-hand side through a culmination of, God bless him, you know, losing his dad, and then Joe Gomez being ill. We didn't have a right-back cover and we end up with Curtis Jones there. That's kind of no break glass option, really, is it? But it was tough for us. But he's a lad that promises big things, and you know, we talk about in the future where does Trent end up playing. If you move him into midfield, you lose the surprise element of overloading, and that concerns me. And if you move him there, who do you move him there instead of? Because, you know, we didn't spend £70 million on Szoboszlai to sort of then decide to play second fiddle to Trent if you move him into midfield. I don't see that happening. But if Bradley's in the right space, you know, mentally, because it's tough for him, what he's been through, then he'll be a welcome addition to the squad. And if he carries on the way he's going, he's on a really good trajectory to be, you know, a bit of a good talent down that right hand side when we need him.
It'll be interesting, Dan, because we haven't seen it really too much yet, but like Andy Robbo came back at the weekend, mm-hmm. played pretty well. Obviously Kostas come back as well, which is great to see, obviously after his injury as well. It would be interesting to see how Liverpool set up if it was Bradley and Robertson, because that is like old school fullbacks, like they're very of an older era, having both of them. Mm-hmm. Liverpool tend, they've moved away from that since the Alexander Arnold's emergence, rightly so. Before that, it was never that. You know, it was Moreno for a bit with Klein. You had a bit of Milner playing there, difference boy. Two flying fullbacks. It would be interesting to see in pre-season. They actually asked Connor to invert a couple of times. They've asked Tim Akas to do that as well. But do you see a world where Robertson, Bradley back forward containing those two works? And if so, do Liverpool have to change how they play? Because they are lads who want to bomb on, they want to get down the byline, they want to get crosses, all that kind of stuff. They are very, very similar players, all being on opposite sides.
Yeah, there are massive similarities stylistically between the two of them, to be fair, in terms of the way they want to go about their business. I mean, they are very, very alike in that sense. As you've all rightly said, it completely depends on Conor Bradley's frame of mind heading into the weekend. But if he is available, I think him coming into the team is a bit of a no-brainer. With Robertson on the other side, yeah, I can see a way it works. And most of these players, albeit some of them are relatively new, have played in a system that allows for two bombing on fullbacks, because that's what Trent was before more recently, very similar to Robertson on the other side, and got up and down whichever flank it was on, essentially both fullbacks. So yeah, I think it works fine. It'll be a little bit of a throwback for them potentially. You might not have as much of the inverted stuff going on, because you're right, I watched Conor Bradley do it in Germany firsthand, and does it well. He's very technically confident, he's very technically assured, he's got a lot of quality on the ball. I think a lot of that stems from what he did last season alone at Bolton, because he was essentially used as like a right wing back who got himself in very, very advanced areas. Off the top of my head, I don't remember exactly how many, but he chipped in with goals and assists last season, so it's and a couple of big ones along the way as well. I know he swept up their awards and stuff like that, so no great surprise to see him score the goal he did against Chelsea, even that manner, because I said, hey, there's a moment whereby when he picked up the ball and he was sort of advancing into such clear space, open water, I was like, hang on, that's our young right back who just kind of broke into the team. And then I went, hang on, that's Conor Bradley, he was boss last year at this for Bolton, and all was fine from there on out. So yeah, I think we'll see him doing a bit of the inverted stuff. I think maybe they take it in turns. I think Conor Bradley would probably take the lead in that sense. But again, I think you maybe just revert to type a little bit, and have him sort of a bit of a throwback, a former Liverpool system, a former Liverpool way of playing against a Brentford team that is so physical and does look to dominate, especially the midfield areas, might not be a bad thing, to be fair. And if you have to go with Taro Endo in there to add a bit of that steel, because you're not getting Trent as much, maybe, who knows. But in terms of the fullbacks, I'd have no qualms, no issues whatsoever with it being a Conor Bradley. The only thing I would say, and it kind of comes back to what we said earlier on about getting a bit more height in the side, maybe that's another nod towards that. Because if you're going to have Robertson and Conor Bradley delivering crosses as opposed to Trent doing other types of passes, you probably even more want to get your Jota, your Gakpo and your Nunes on the pitch.
I still think, if I'm honest, I think that this weekend Gomez will play at right back if Trent's out. And again, it's a good option to have, Chloe, because again, not only does he give it a bit of aerial protection, he's been good, he's been in good form as well. So do have, again, it's back to, yeah, it feels like we have options until we don't.
Yeah.
Like, all being well, hopefully the illness wasn't that bad where it keeps him off for a week or so, because that would be quite something. But Liverpool will have options there. Again, we're talking about the sit rep of the squad kind of stuff. It feels like the Arsenal are slowly starting to creep back in, and that, fingers crossed, Gomez, I mean, you'd expect him to be available, and therefore he's another viable option, because again, there's a world in where he plays at left back at the weekend if he's fit, because he's another one who hasn't deserved to be left out of the team.
That's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see him at left back, and I'd like to see Conor Bradley at right back.
Okay. That's an option, the
height, yeah, you're looking at me like that, but I don't know why, I just really like it. And look, I adore Robertson, and Robertson was really good the other day.
You've just pinned them off.
But the balance of the team when Conor Bradley and Joe Gomez has played has been
together,
brilliant.
Why
change something if it works, especially against the side who's going to disrupt you, try and make it as scrappy as possible, and try and make the game as physical as possible as well. I feel like Joe Gomez would be great for that. And also, he has been the player to cut inside whilst giving the licence to Conor Bradley to go wide. He did it against Chelsea, he's done it for Fulham. And in both games, Joe Gomez was unbelievable, and also he could have had a couple of goals if maybe.
Stop saying that.
I will not until he scores this goal.
Didn't
like he's
Robbo
destined
tell
to
him
get
to stop shooting? I'm sure Robbo told him to stop shooting.
Every time he shoots, I tell him not to shoot unless it's very, very close. And yeah, Fulham, he was really close to scoring. But yeah, I just think the balance of the team has been a lot better. Obviously, if Conor Bradley isn't up to it, then Joe Gomez right back and Robbo left back, that's perfect as well. But just based on the balance of the team, I really love what Conor Bradley offers us, and if he wants to go and he's ready to go, I'd all like let him play right back straight away, because I felt like we've missed him in the games where he hasn't been available, obviously due to reasons we can all understand, especially that Arsenal game. I just needed him to pen Martinelli back and be defensively really secure. I like those two partnerships. It's worked for us so far. Why change it right now if you've got the ability to put them both back in?
He scored seven at Bolton Wednesday, and six assists, which is not good bad numbers. Good for a fullback. Absolutely fantastic numbers indeed. The last one we haven't spoken about, Dan, in fact, so seriously, I'll come to you, is Mo Salah. Now, Jürgen's comments last week in the press conference were interesting, saying maybe next week, maybe the week after, and he went, if you ask Mo, it'll be next week. And it's interesting because I read the transcript of Liverpool wrote this up on the official website, and they missed that bit off. They just left that bit out. They didn't write it about it. It was it does feel like if anyone follows Mo Salah on Instagram, they'll have seen never has a man been putting himself more on display that he's trying to get back and that he's working his way back towards it. He is desperate to play this weekend. Obviously, I understand why. Liverpool will have to be careful with him, but if there's a man who can recover, it will be him, because there have been no corners cut from this fella. He's the ultimate professional. They did say at the time 21 days roughly out. It's been that now. Like this, you're getting past that point at this stage, so there's a chance he's back. They're not going to rush him, but if you're ever going to try and get someone back in the team, he's the fella you're going to do it for. So it'll be interesting to see, because I can't imagine a world where Jürgen can go to Mo Salah and go, one more week, his head might fall off.
Yeah, it might do, but we've just spent 10 minutes talking about reoccurring injuries. Yep. So, absolutely, he's an explosive player, and he plays an explosive part within our tactics, so we've got to be really, really careful with him.
Yep.
And this might not be the game we choose to do it with. So this is the one that if you're going to protect somebody for that extra week, knowing he's going to be available for between now and the end of the season in the way that he has in all the years he's been at the football club, then he just might have to take that one on the chin and listen to what's said to him.
I'd love to be in that room.
Yeah, that happens. I reckon he'd see his arse big time.
Absolutely. Mate, it's been 5-0. He's been subbed off and he's flew his wristbands on the floor. Like,
well, there's a caveat to that. If we're not 100%, the old smartphone thing that Jürgen references about, and you don't know he's available yet, type of thing. If they say don't do it, then we're gonna have to go with that, aren't we? But going back to the point before about Chloe with the firepower, if you look at European football and look at all the top sides, no one's got five forwards like we've got the strongest forward line in European football. I'd argue probably in world football, given the quality of them all. And they're all, like you said, even Gakpo's got 9 goals, so they're all contributing. And it might be a game too early for Salah. I hope it's not, because of what he gives us. Even when he's not playing well, he's still scoring goals and contributing with assists, isn't he? So he's talismanic, absolutely. But I think it's not the end of the world if he doesn't play. It'd be nice to see him play. It's not the end of the world, because we need him for the running. Absolutely, we do.
That is the thing, though. What this injury's done, Dan, it's devastating for Egypt, of course, is that they got knocked out and Salah wasn't part of it. But because Liverpool have gone pretty much unscathed, they've lost one game without him, kind of thing. And it was a big one, of course, it was, and it's one that he'd have been desperate to play. But they've got themselves in a position now where Mo Salah's had that month off, and you can bring a fresh, rejuvenated, probably slightly pissed off Mo Salah back into the fold. He'll be devastated at what happened at the AFCON. He is African.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, he is African. Not the Asian Cup this time or anything.
It wasn't the Euros for Mo. That kind of Mo Salah with the bit between his teeth, Dan, could be massive for Liverpool coming back in. If he takes the frustration of getting injured for AFCON out on Premier League and European defences, then we'll be happy days for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a dangerous proposition for the rest of the league, isn't it? Chloe referenced it before with De Bruyne coming back and a little bit of Erling Haaland in the same boat. And we've done a lot of what we've done in recent weeks without Salah and a few more key players thrown into the mix as well. And that kind of goes unnoticed, really. Maybe that's because it is such a revolving door at the minute with Liverpool, where by one minute you've got them back and the media kind of show they're back, they're fine, and the next minute they're out. And you don't even seem to realise that they're out. And everyone just kind of goes, oh, Liverpool were a bit lucky, not knowing that we had 10 absentees on the day. You know what I mean? So, yeah, absolutely. I mean, getting Salah back at this stage, if you know all goes well in terms of his recovery and easing back in, I don't think I'll be starting him at the weekend against Brentford for all the reasons Steve just referenced there. But if you can get him back up to speed and get him up and running again, in terms of right now when we're getting very much to the business end, if he can hit one of those purple patches that he sometimes has as well, Liverpool, listen, he's been absolutely goal ridden ever since he arrived at the club, hasn't he? It's been a joke essentially, but every now and then his level just goes up even further. He had that moment, I think it was sort of Christmas time, October maybe, whereby he was the best player in the world for for a little bit. If he has one of them between now and the end of the season, then the sky's the limit, isn't it? Because he's been good this season. He's been good in certain games this season. He's not been good in other games this season, but his goals and his assists have been an absolute constant. If he can up everything all of a sudden, because he is coming back a little bit pissed off by what's been going on, a little bit pissed off missing games, maybe a little bit pissed off that he might have to wait another week, who knows? It is a very, very frightening proposition for the rest and very exciting for Liverpool, because all we had to do heading into when it was AFCON, when it was the Asian Cup as well with Endo, is kind of get by. And you can lose that game against Arsenal with Endo and with, of course you can, that's Arsenal way, it's a difficult game, but we've kind of ridden that storm now, we've got over the other side of it, and now we're getting these players back, Salah in particular. It's exciting.
I feel about the squad club now, that given that we've got, so basically as it stands, the only long term one is Thiago, well, sorry, and Bacic
as well.
Bacic, but Matip, yeah, he's gone for the season, so he's kind of, I'm saying,
old news, Joel. Now,
yeah, sorry, Joel. I apologise. He looked the other day on that video, by the way. Like, he just let his hair and his beard grow.
Didn't he?
He looked very much like a fellow who knows he's not going to be in the public eye much. He just let it grow.
To be on camera for that.
It was like he's going to be the next Castaway.
It was a strange one, but yeah, obviously, Salah and Szoboszlai don't feel too far away. We'll see where they're at with Alexander Arnold, but Liverpool are still in the hunt for four trophies. You know what the big one is that they want, and the rest are a little bit behind that. How are you feeling about Liverpool squad now as we look towards what the running has pretty much started? Now we're all on City watch, we're all a little bit on Arsenal watch, we're keeping an eye on everything. Now, how are you feeling about Liverpool squad depth, options, etc.?
I'd like a couple more players back. I mean, we say Sabo doesn't seem that far away, but we said that 2 weeks ago and he was back for half a game and then got off again.
Unless
I'm given the he's played 90 minutes and he feels great, that's when I'll not worry about him. Salah, once again, it's his hamstring, and like you said, there's an explosive player. You've got to see how it reacts in game, you know, when he makes those explosive runs and he chases after the ball, he's making the runs in behind, that's when his hamstring's going to be under pressure. So that's when I'll feel okay, when he's actually got through that. And look, what was up with Alisson Becker? Because I thought he had the flu.
Well, yeah,
and then they actually announced it and just said they didn't really know.
Klopp spoke about it as well, didn't he? He said something with Ali, but he never mentioned.
Yeah,
James Pearce reported illness, and then he said that he was meant to play on the Saturday morning, reported ill. Was the report?
I did see something.
Jürgen Klopp did not want to specify exactly, because he literally said Joe Gomez next was out with an illness, but he just avoided saying anything about
it. It was quite concerning. Alisson,
Look, I'm feeling good. I like the versatility in the squad. I like the players we've got. I think Trent is a massive miss. Hopefully that won't be long. I'd like to see where we are with that. But ultimately, Liverpool have just got to focus on themselves.
Yeah.
Do their part of the job, and you know, you kind of have to, the players have to forget about the other teams. Me, however, I will be sat there breaking my heart over and over again every single weekend as I turn on, watch Manchester City go 1-0 up in 5 minutes and turn it right back off. But yeah, ask me again in 2 weeks' time.
Okay. So, how are you feeling? What squad are you, positive, negative?
Follow that. Yeah, I'm all right with it, to be honest with you. The Trent thing's a worry, because he missed almost a month, was it, last time? And if he's done it again, something in the rehab didn't work. So that one's kind of a piece of string, really, with regards to that one. But we've spoken about the balance and the options. We've got two left-backs getting match fit again now, so Joe can swap over to the other side, and obviously Conor Bradley's there too for that. There's a big loss because of what he gives you, but I think as they start coming back one by one, Szoboszlai's a big, big miss at the moment, because physicality wise whoever's been playing on that right hand side, it hasn't really worked, and it's what he does going backwards, and Conor Bradley's going to need that support, and Joe Gomez is going to need that support too, because centre backs who go and play at full backs, it's difficult for them, because a genuine fullback knows how to use the line to be his friend, you know what I mean, in terms of spacing and stopping players doing certain things. And that's not a criticism of Gomez, but he's a centre back. So yeah, I'm okay with it. The good news is we're all the lads up top seem to be firing, you know, and Gakpo, when he comes on, he's you can see how eager he is to get involved and score goals, you know, he's getting himself into good positions. When he came on against Newcastle, I thought he made a difference, because we just kept the ball and we just looked better, and we built off him. So it's nice options to have. And just going back to the Thiago thing, we don't miss Thiago this season in the way that we did last season, because we've got front foot midfielders. We never had them last time. Mm-hmm. So when you were looking at Henderson or Fabinho to do something that looks like a line breaking pass, didn't get it very often. McAllister's doing that with every time he gets the ball, that's the first thing he's looking for is how can I break the lines? Who can I give it to in advanced positions where they can hurt the opposition? So he's kind of doing a little bit of what Thiago was doing, maybe not with the flair, because that's what Thiago's got in abundance, isn't it?
He's ridiculous.
But it's really, really efficient and it works really, really well. And I think in this midfield setup, we seems strange to say it, we can afford to be without Thiago, as we've proven all season.
You've done all that without him so far, haven't
you? Yeah, because we've got players of that ilk.
He would have been a luxury.
We've got players of that ilk. Like you said before, Chloe, you bring him on 70 minutes when you've gassed the team to death and then you've got this man fizzing balls around. Like
absolute metronome.
Literally gliding across a pitch.
Just watch out for the black round the corner blind one that sells everybody down the river.
Loves one of them again.
Yeah. He does, doesn't he? But I think the squad's in good shape. I think, you know, do what we do. Fight to the end. These lads know what they want to do. They seem to be in good headspace. And the most important thing is they've dealt with the bombshell that we got from Jürgen a few weeks ago really, really well. So that's testament to the mentality and what they're building in the squad, really, isn't it?
Absolutely. You've got a couple of super chats before we finish. Then Solo says, big up to the Red Men TV. I'm a 10-year listener. Thank you very much, Solo. Then says, the season will be decided when we play Manchester City. So, that's a big game. I mean, you have to big game, if not. If Chelsea could do us a favour next weekend it'd be nice. Shout out to Edward as well. Edward gifted out 10 YouTube memberships. So congratulations to
them.
Nice one to Edward. And who also messaged with a super chat saying, our midfielder, where everyone's fist should be Endo. So the DM should be Endo, Thiago or Stefan Bacetic, then one of Elliott and Soberslight, and then one of McAllister and Jones. I think that makes...
McAllister, Soberslight, Jones.
So Endo, Thiago or Stefan as a six. He wants McAllister and Jones, or Jones on the left-hand side. We had a conversation about that on the final where there'll be a clip coming out on YouTube, so I'm not too sure about that one. Where McAllister's best position is. We had a chat about that on an earlier show, so you guys will find out. See that on the feed a little bit later on. Bradley has really missed... He absolutely is. Up the Redmen. Yeah, up the Redmen. Up the Redmen. Now, thank you very much, Edward. I was going to say up you, but then that sounds like I'm having a go, but it was meant in a positive way, but it wasn't.
Up yourself.
Yeah, see, now I've listened. Luckily, I censored myself, but then I said it anyway. So I might as well, I should have just said it in the first place, but yeah, thank you very
Stop
much.
Stop digging, Steve. Yeah.
No, it's fine. It's my internal monologue can come out on the show any time of day. Right then, guys, thank you so much for joining me for this one. Just to let you know, Bias Football Podcast is coming up next. We're going to talk about Arsenal battling West Ham. We're going to talk about Manchester City Everton. We're going to have a look at the relegation battle and, of course, the return of the Champions League, as well as naming our bellends of the week. So, go over to redmenplus.com. Sign up now. You'll get the Biased Football Podcast, the show where we get to be completely, utterly biased about all the other teams in the Premier League. Thanks very much for watching or listening. Thanks to Dan, Chloe, and to Steve. And we'll see you all next week on the Originals Podcast. See you soon.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.